We read an unusual Haftorah today about a futuristic era in which the Bnei Israel, the Jewish nation, will be fighting against their arched enemies, the war of Gog and Magog. One must wonder, what does this have anything to do with the holiday of Sukkot? What does this have to do with us making it relevant today? Furthermore, one of the names for the holiday in which we're currently celebrating, of Sukkot, is it is a Zaman Simchasenu. It's a time of happiness, of rejoicing. How could we be reading about a bloody battle, a violent war? This clearly is not Zman Simchasenu. It's not a time of happiness. I'd like to share with you today a very interesting promise. A promise that God made to Avraham in Parshat Lech Lecha. Avraham was down. He had no children. And God reassured him. Vayotzei oso achutza, and he took Avraham outside. Vayomer, and he said, Habet no hashemayma, gaze toward the heavens. Usafor hakochavim, count the stars. Im tuchal lisporotam, see if you're able to count them. Vayomer lo, koye zarecha. And Hashem said to Avraham, so shall your offspring be. Apparently, what this is telling us is that we will be as numerous as the stars. However, if we look at the most recent census, we know that's certainly not the case. We are small in number, a very small minority, a speck on this world. So how do we find that Hashem really kept His word, that we are like the Kochavim, that we are as numerous as the stars? And the way that I understand this is not as a matter of quantity, but rather as a matter of quality. Certainly we are a specific number. Everything in this physical world is finite. So when God compares us to the Kochavim, to the stars in the sky, what Hashem is telling us, and Avram, is that each and every Jew has endless potential. That we have the ability to be able to reach as far as the stars. But sometimes we don't. Sometimes we don't reach those heights. And what is the reason for that? Why do we not reach all the way to the sky with endless potential? And unfortunately, we ourselves are our worst enemy. Our Yetzer Hara within ourselves. Perhaps it's the fear of the unknown or the lack of faith in ourselves and our own abilities. We limit ourselves. This is the message of Sukkot, and this is the message of today's Haftorah. The battle that we fight is not a futuristic fight of Gog and Magog, but rather it's an ongoing struggle that every person has with themselves each and every day of their life. The milchama of Gog u'Magog. Gog, says Rav Shamshul Fel Hirsch, comes from the word Gag, a roof. Because our greatest enemy is the Gag. By putting a limit, a ceiling above ourselves. And this is our cap. We cannot go above it. The war of Gog is appropriately understood on a holiday in which we do not sit underneath a roof, Rather, we sit underneath a sukkah to teach us that we should not be agog. We should not have limitations. We should be a temporary sukkah, realizing that even when it appears as though we have a limitation, as though we have something above us, we can look above us at this temporary structure, at this sukkah, and realize that there are holes in it that give us the ability to pierce through with our eyes, to be able to look above this sukkah and realize that in fact we can see the stars. To never limit our sights and to always strive to the highest of heights. The sky's the limit. On Sukkot, we have 7 mitzvos. And each of those 7 mitzvos pertain to us in a special way. The 7 mitzvos are the 4 species, the arba minim, the lulav, the esrog, which is the citron, the hadas, the myrtle, and the aravos, the willow branch. The 5th mitzvah is dwelling, sitting in a sukkah. The chagigah, the offering for the festival. And the 7th mitzvah, the mitzvah of simcha, bringing joy and happiness to our families during the festival. Interestingly enough, there's another seven of Sukkot, the Ushpizen. We have guests that come into our sukkah on each of these 7 days. The names of these guests, in order, Avraham, Yitzchak, Yaakov, Yosef, Moshe, Aharon, and the 7th, King David, David HaMelech. The Tana Debei Eliyahu explains a very possible, incredible statement. He says, Matai Yagiu Masei Lamasei Aboisai. That we have to constantly ask ourselves, when am I able to reach the level of the characteristics, the greatness of our forefathers? The Ushpizen are more than just guests that come into our sukkah, but rather they represent 7 attributes. 7 attributes that we must strive for and to be able to emulate them. To be able to grow, and to be able to reach the heights of our avos. They reached their own levels. These levels of perfection on their own. But we need, instead, the 7 mitzvot for our own external stimuli, to be able to remind us of each of them, these ushpizen and these guests, and their ability to reach endless potential. We take the lulav, and the lulav reminds us of the great heights of Avraham Avinu. For the lulav represents the physical body, the spine, the backbone. For Avraham was the first person who believed in monotheism, that there was only one God. He himself was willing to smash all of his father's idols, to be able to put his life on the line for what he knew was correct. The message of Avraham and the message of the lulav is that we as Jews also must have a backbone. We must do whatever we need to do to stand up for what we know is right, the correct thing. That is the message on the first day of Sukkot, by bringing in Avraham, that we should develop pride and a backbone. On the second day of Sukkot, we invite Yitzchak. Yitzchak is the Arava. The Arava, the willow, you can take it and you'll smell. You'll realize it has no fragrance. and it also has no taste. You see, the Arava represents the Jew who is completely nullified to the will of God. Someone who has no agenda, rather to serve as God. This was Yitzchak. Yitzchak was the man who represents being able to be mevatel, to nullify his will to God's will. We find this in three stories of Yitzchak. The story of the Akedah, that at 37 years old, he was willing to have his life taken away. So much so that it was considered to be a test for Avraham. How about for Yitzchak? Yitzchak was on such a great level, it was as though he wasn't even part of the equation, because he completely nullified his will, as though he didn't exist. Very much like the Arava, with no taste and no fragrance. We also find the story of Yitzchak. One of the few stories is by the wells of his father. The pasuk tells us, "Vayikru lehen shemos kishemos asher kar lehen aviv." The Torah says that he named the wells the exact same name that his father called them. What does this need to be reminded for? Why do we need to know that he named these wells the same as his father? It's to show that he was merely a shadow to his father, as though he was not even in the picture. He was a completely nullified man to the service of God. And finally, at the end of Parsha Toldot, the story where the bracha, the blessing, was taken from Yaakov, given to him, and not to his brother Esav. And Yitzchak again seems as though he is not even in the picture. As if he has no idea what's going on. Because Yitzchak was a true Eved Hashem, serving God with no other agenda except to serve God. As though he had no existence, no reality. On the second day, we try to rise to be like Yitzchak. The third day, we invite into our sukkah Yaakov. Yaakov represents the sukkah. That when we leave our permanent structure, we go to a temporary one, we say that we really need God. God is the one who is able to take care of us, and without Him, we are hopeless. And this is what Yaakov says, "Hatzileni no miyad achi miyad Esav, save me from my brother, from Esav." And then he turns to God and says, "If you're able to do this for me, if you could only help me and save me, I'll be so indebted, so grateful." Yaakov, furthermore, states after encountering his brother, "V'Yaakov nasa sukota, v'yivin lo bayit, v'miknei asa sukot, al kein koreshem hamakom sukot." And Yaakov journeyed, and he built a house and livestock for his animals. He made sukot, and he named the place sukot. He didn't name the place house, a permanent structure, but rather he named the city Sukkot, temporary. Yaakov was a man who only relied on God and never on himself, on his own strengths and his abilities, but rather to turn to Hashem to be able to show our allegiance and respect for Him. On the fourth day of Sukkot, we invite Yosef HaTzadik. Yosef represents the Hadas, the myrtle. If we look at the Hadas, it's shaped like the eyes. For Yosef, as beautiful of a man he was a person that did not accept the very difficult test of Eshet Potiphar, and he did not allow his eyes to control his heart and his mind. So much so that a person who descends, who comes from Yosef, the Talmud says does not have the ayin hara, that no evil eye can possibly be placed on them. For Yosef has complete control over his eyes, and therefore no eyes can have control over him. On the fourth day, we ask Hashem, just like Yosef, that we should guard our eyes, the hadas, that we should be able to serve Hashem, and to look at what we should look at, and distance ourselves from things that could be dangerous for us spiritually. On the fifth day, we bring in Moshe Rabbeinu. And Moshe is the Esrog. The Esrog, which has a beautiful smell, a beautiful taste. Just like a Jew who has perfect Torah knowledge and tremendous Ma'asim Tovim, performance of mitzvot. On the fifth day, we ask that we should be more like Moshe, to be perfect in our spiritual pursuits. On the sixth day, we usher in Aharon HaKohen. Aharon the Kohen was the man who represented Avoda, the service in the Mishkan, in the Beit HaMikdash, and the bringing of the Karbonot, the various offerings to God. And the mitzvah that we remind ourselves of Aharon is the mitzvah of the Chagiga sacrifice. That although we nowadays do not have the sacrifice, we have instead our tefillos, that we should perfect our davening, improve the way in of our kavana, of how we think about the proper thoughts during the davening, that we should be more like Aharon. And on the seventh and final day, we bring in David HaMelech. David HaMelech was a man that was happy. A man who wrote the most beautiful songs of Tehillim, of Psalms. Although when studying his life, we see he was constantly in trouble. The difficulties of his own family, with his son pursuing to kill him. Nonetheless, David always tried to make the best out of his life. And this is the message of Simcha. No matter what God gives us, no matter what life struggles we may have, remember David HaMelech and his Simcha. And God willing, we should also have such joy, such Simcha in our lives. This is the message of the Ushpizin. This is the message of Sukkot. That we must not have a Gog, we must not have a roof, but rather a Sukkah. Let's raise the roof and bring each of these guests into our lives. And remember, just as Casey Kasem once said, we can reach the stars. Good Yom Tov.